Welcome to the Talking Split podcast. I'm Rob Coulter, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. I'm flying a little bit solo until our first guest jumps in. As always, we do appreciate you listening. All we ask is that you do leave a rating or a review. And if you're able to like, share, retweet, or anything to help grow the podcast audience, that would be fantastic. You're able to reach out via the hashtag Talking Split if there are any parts of the conversation you want to continue also. Really exciting news during the week for everyone involved with the sport, with the return of basketball being approved. But of course, with the great news comes a word of caution for all our coaches as well. We've been very cautious that we aren't putting our players in a position to get injured, but rushing back straight into competition is going to cause some significant problems for them. So we have reached out to an expert in the field with Darren McInnes from Core Advantage. As always, when we have limited knowledge on the actual topic ourselves, we go and find the experts, and we are incredibly lucky to have Darren McInnes from Core Advantage with us today. He's been a long-time supporter of Basketball Victoria and athletes from a mountain of sports, but in particular, basketball has been the main focus. Welcome, Darren. Appreciate you jumping in. I know it's flat out for you guys at the moment, so I do appreciate
Thanks.
Your time.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Good to be here.
3 months ago when everything hit and we sort of said, hey, everything's got to shut down. What have you guys been doing in this time?
We've been busy. Well, look, when the shutdown hit, my thing was to all of our athletes is that everyone is going to slip backwards except for you guys. And you're going to push forward. So our mission was, we said to them, this is the ultimate compulsory preseason, and we are going to attack it so hard that when you come back, you have not just gained ground on people that were better than you, you've overtaken them. So that was our singular mission. So while we were open, we were pursuing that in terms of pushing people to, you know, really treat us, because we don't get enough of an off-season. So I was like, there's the silver lining here. This is an off-season. Yep. And then when we got fully shut, what we did is we transitioned to 100% online programming. So a whole bunch of athletes stayed with us, and we programmed for them via our app Team Builder. So we check in with them each week, and they did their workouts in, you know, in the garage or whatever, and really maintained. So we've actually been, it's quite time intensive doing that. So we've been really busy doing that. And then Jacob built a thing called the Athlete Lockdown, which was a free daily newsletter for the entire duration of shutdown, giving people workouts. So he was flat chat with that. But in our spare time when we weren't doing that, we decided to completely tear up the gym and rebuild our whole concept of how to do it. Because it was one of those things where we've been really, we've got a great job. I love coming to work every day. We work with great athletes and it's brilliant. We've, you know, had this mission of delivering world-class support, the kind you'd normally only get in a professional setting to anyone. And, you know, it's that side of it over the last 5 years has gone really well. But we had a good long hard look at the business and how we're doing. We're like, we actually can't return in a post-COVID era with the same format. Like, we can't be having all those people packed into classes. It's actually just not gonna work. So we said, all right, let's tear it up and start again. So it's now an open gym format. So instead of the previous, instead of the previous thing where you would come into the gym and you'd be in a class. Now, it's there's certain start times because we've got to spread our people out appropriately because we've got a limit of 20 people. But it's an open gym format where everything's customized for that particular athlete, and they go through that with the coaches kind of roving around coaching them. So quite a different feel. We've opened the whole gym up. We've put in a reception bar. We're making coffees and shakes. And
oh, the dream.
It's a bit more, it's pretty exciting. It's kind of like we're calling it Core Advantage 3.0. And it's more like a clubhouse. So I wanted to feel a bit more sort of special in that way as well. So it's been kind of fun getting to a full do-over, I suppose.
Absolutely. That's brilliant. And I'm sure you're like everyone else that's sick of Zoom meetings and the like at the moment and dealing with this sort of thing. So it'd be great to actually get back in the gym with your athletes and back into the what you prefer to as the proper coaching, I suppose.
Yeah, the real coaching, yeah. We really miss them. And you miss – I think you take it for granted. I'm sure it's the same with you. You take it for granted – the energy you get out of training athletes. All of us as a staff, we're like, oh, I feel flat without that interaction and the buzz and the banter.
Yep.
So, we're super psyched to be starting up again.
It's fantastic. And anyone that hasn't been down to Core Advantage, we obviously highly recommend it. It's a fantastic facility down there, and the work they do is first class. So we'll give you some more details on how to get in touch with the Core Advantage guys at the end of the podcast as well, and we'll make sure we throw it on the social media sort of side of things as well, just to make sure that we are talking what we're going to talk about today, and that is making sure we don't break our athletes as we return to this. Because, I mean, obviously, huge news during the week that basketball is returning, which is fun, and everyone's excited for that. There's no question about it. But we can hear the collective knees, ankles, and backs and hip flexors of athletes around the state groaning because there are some problems associated with just turning the tap back on and going straight back into play. So the thing I was going to really find out is that why do we actually have to take a slow approach to returning to this? Why do we have to just softly rather than just, no, we're good, we can just play again?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we can tend to think of sport as a bit like you're reading a book and you're up to chapter, you put the book down at chapter three, I'll just pick it back up at chapter three and start again. What I think people have got to be aware of, and it's at all levels, is that we're not built as a species to play basketball. We didn't evolve to do basketball. So there's certain adaptations our bodies build up through sport that kind of make us strong enough to play safely and well. And we've just gone through this period of the most profound de-adaptation ever. Like you've gone from high intensity sport multiple times per week, sometimes multiple times per day, to at home. I mean, the kids are back at school now, which is good, so they're out and about moving. But there's still been this profound period of deload where they just didn't do anything. Or even the ones that were really diligent and worked out in their garage and did everything they could, it's still not the same as the real load of sport. And I think that little things people don't think about, like vitamin D. Yeah. So in the course of daily life, we get out and about and we get a reasonable exposure to vitamin D, which keeps our bones strong and our system healthy. You're going to have a whole population that's generally had less, probably a third, two-thirds less exposure to vitamin D than they would have normally. And so those bones are not as strong as they would normally be. And bones get strong by impact. So you take away impact, take away vitamin D, now you've got a little more risk going on there as well. So I guess that's the big thing, is it's not just a rest, it's such a profound deload that the reload can't be just like, you might come back from a camping trip, you've been away 10 days, we've got to reload you a bit. Yep. But you've still been in the sun, running around, doing stuff. It's not exactly the same, but it's in the ballpark. We've never been such a disparate thing. So I think that's a big thing. So the de-adaptations are pretty profound, particularly with tendons.
Right. So Christmas is usually a bad time of year for this, and we get a little bit of a snapshot as to what it looks like when we go basketball 11.9 months of the year.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of a 2 week, maybe 3 weeks if you're lucky, break over the Christmas period, and then we see the injury start to – this has been way longer than we've ever had. Like, this is 3 months long. This could be anything.
Yeah. Like some of the cells in people's body, some of the cells in these athletes' tendons – those cells were created during lockdown. Those cells have actually never been exposed to full court running. They don't even know what it is.
Yep.
So I think, it's going to require a more intelligent approach than we've ever had to reloading. We know how to do it in terms of one of the things you get good at in my job is we're often kind of the last resort where people have had an injury, they've had a number of people try and help them, and they finally I'll go to Core Advantage, we'll see if they can help us. And so we get these people who've been on long deloads. Like people might have had, I had once an athlete who did an ACL, came back, did her ACL again the next week, and then came and saw us and was like, I need help. Yeah. So she went 600 days between games.
Yeah, that's great.
So we've got a lot of experience with these reloads. It's got to be a smooth process because it can go pretty horribly wrong.
So what are the sort of injuries that are likely to occur if we don't abide by this? Like, where are the problem areas that we've really got to be mindful of?
I think lower body is the most obvious. I think Achilles is going to be really interesting to see what we get there. A great sort of case study for this was the NFL lockout. So they had maybe about 8 years ago where they had contractual disputes and they didn't play for, I think it was 3-4 months.
Yeah, it was.
Yep. And they had something ridiculous like 7 Achilles ruptures upon return to play. Yeah. Now, they're big athletes. They're big, grown men with explosive, big bodies and so forth. But I think that kind of points to the issues that we're likely to have is that there'll be tendons will get weak. And the thing is, muscles can get strong again quick. You know, you can get a muscle re-strengthened in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks. You can get fit in a matter of days.
Yep.
You can get muscles strong in a matter of weeks. But tendons, they're just slower. They just adapt slower. So I think we'll see quite a lot of tendinopathies, Osgood Schladders, just general tendon stuff at the ankle, at the Achilles, and the knee. And we'll see our fair share of soft tissue. I reckon we'll see a few calf strains, groin strains. I think the biggest thing is that so you've got to have that sense of that the deload's been profound, but then next to that is just how specific a stimulus has to be for it to count. It's like you're shooting on a hoop where there's it's a really narrow hoop. Yeah. If you miss it a little bit, it is out. Classic example is I run 3 times a week. And I upped my pace, and I've done that forever. So I'm pretty well adapted. I know what I'm doing. I run and my body feels fine. I run around 5-6K. The other week I ran, instead of 6K, I ran 6.6K. So a couple more minutes of running, not a lot. And I ran it a little faster than normal. I ran 5.06 pace rather than 5.09 pace per K. So both a slow old man running.
Still faster than me, mate. You're good.
But I was sore for 4 days after running that extra 600 meters at 3 seconds per K faster. Because those joint angles, I was just probably a little more of a body angle, and it's very specific. So that's the same with the sport thing, is the specificity demand is really huge. So it's got to be, you've got to try and replicate those shapes, I suppose is the thing. It's not just good enough to be moving around, you've got to have it be pretty specific.
You've done that very well. You're the first person I've ever heard say specificity without butchering it completely.
I don't jinx me. Every talk I go into, I'm like, don't stuff that up.
I like it. So what are the warning signs for coaches that we can sort of see, okay, we're back on court, we're doing things. What's a sign straight away that actually we may need to just taper this back a little bit?
I think the best warning sign is soreness. Yep. I think that's, when we can talk later about the phased approach to how you, build it back up. And there's a lot of good, pretty solid methods you can follow. But the ultimate thing is always the how's that working out for you test.
Yep.
And that is just, all right, how sore are you from the last session? If you feel golden and nothing is sore, you're probably good. If you feel tired and flat, probably in a bad place. I think we're going to have athletes who also have neural fatigue where their nervous system's tired. And so that will be, their muscles might not necessarily be sore, but they're going to be a bit flat, a bit grumpy.
Yep.
It'll be hard to pick that though, because they'll also be frustrated because a lot of them will suck a bit compared to old them. So they're going to be impatient and irritated about how where they're at, because like, this isn't me. This is, I'm better than this. Because timing will be off. In basketball, particularly, I think what's going to be hilarious is passing.
Yep. Absolutely.
I reckon, shooting, you kind of know what you're going to do before you do it.
Yep.
But passing, it's such a dance of timing and reactions and reading body language. And I think that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, if it sucked before, we're in real trouble when it comes back. Like, that's going to be a really interesting one for a lot of people, I think. So the big thing out of that is that our coaches really need to be talking to their players a lot more than ever before, I think. Yep. Like, this is when they walk into training sessions, whether it be a little chart and just write down what number out of 10 you're feeling at this point and tailor your session to that, I suppose, more than anything else. But just find out.
I would say try and do it. I know it's more laborious, but I would say try and do it in a one-on-one. If you can just take them aside and have a quiet chat, or you can even do a thing of having each person just quickly tell you where they're at but without the others hearing.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because one of the problems, particularly with Australians, because we don't want to look like whingers, is that you'll say, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10, how fresh are you feeling? And they will all answer 7.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what's happening,
yep,
they'll tell you they're a 7 because no one wants to look soft.
Yep.
We did it with we were doing this with the boomers in the WNBL a couple of years ago when I was doing high performance managing work with them. And I just got fed up with it. So I ended up making, along with Maddie Garrick, we made up an infographic and had a picture of 1 through 10 and what that actually looked like to make them do it, because we just weren't getting good answers. So yep. I think no one wants to look soft around their peers. So you want to create an environment where that athlete can say they're feeling a bit crap and not feel like they're being a wuss or they're letting the team down.
Yeah, definitely.
But which is it's a difficult balance to get.
Oh, no question. It's and you hit on exactly on it. And a lot of these kids have been out for so long now, they don't want to say, actually, I'm about a 9 or a 10 at the moment because that means I might have to take this session off. And they're so eager to get back into it and the coaches are so eager to get them back on court. It just doesn't work.
And they just lie. Like I found it time and time again. You'd say to it's really important in the gym that you know exactly how someone's feeling before you push them in a workout. And I've had examples. I had an athlete who came in. We're doing sprints. He wanted to work on his acceleration. We're doing sprints, and fourth sprint grabs his quad. I'm like, what happened? It's like, oh, I felt a strain. And this is a long time ago. I've learned to ask better questions since then. And I said, what happened? He said, well, it's been sore all week, but I didn't want to tell you because you wouldn't let me do sprints. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't have because you've had a sore quad all week and now you've torn it.
Yeah.
And so athletes, they will just lie because they want to do that work. So I think you've really got to – and one of the best question changes I've made is I used to say, are you feeling good? And they would say, yes, I'm feeling good. And that doesn't work as a question because you're biasing them towards the answer you want to hear. And also, it's also like a standard greeting. Hi, how are you? Good, thanks. It's a bit automatic.
Yep.
Whereas I would say, are you golden? And they'd be like, and they would actually think about it. They go, no, my left calf's a little tight. I had a really hard session last night. Like, okay, yeah. Cool. Let's change that. So I think the power of setting your questions up to give them the ability to give you an honest answer. It's still going to have a few liars, but at least the questions are structured in a good way.
Yeah, no question. And that's the hardest part is getting information out of kids. Like it's any parent will tell you, how was school today? Yeah, good.
Good.
Yep. And then there's a silence afterwards. So it is really important. And this is where the relationship with their players comes in really handy. And, and obviously you deal with this with a lot of the athletes you work with as well. It's not just as simple as they walk in and you don't even think about them. You talk to them a little bit. You find out how their day has been, what they've been doing. And you can find out a lot of information just by just sort of picking their brain a little bit as well.
Okay, a little bit, yeah. And I think it's knowing that, you know, with the boys, the part of the prefrontal cortex in the male brain that assesses risk is not fully online until we are 25 years old as males. So we are literally danger blind till we are 25. And you know, if you go to YouTube and you know, Google Fail Army or one of those, you know, those montages of people doing dumb stuff, it's always the boys. Yeah. Like, you know, we are just not that bright until we're 25. That's why we're great at going in the army because someone tells us to go attack that embankment. We're like, we just do that. And then on the flip side, girls have often a really strong sense of team. They can be a little more teamy than the boys in many cases.
Yep.
And so they really don't want to let their team down as well. So the boys are danger blind and the girls are really team obligated. And so both those things mean that, they're going to tend to be a little bit of risk if you let them make the decisions. You've got to get their input and then as the coach lead the show, I reckon.
Absolutely. So we've just had 3 months off. We're going to return to train over these next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What should the coaches be focusing on then? If we've sort of said pump the brakes on this and don't just flog them, what should they be doing?
Okay, so I think you've got to think of it in phases. I think it's the best way. You've got to work your way backwards from what do we want? End of the process. You want 100% of your team playing in that first match, having a nice time, winning or losing, who cares?
Yep.
Just have them there enjoying themselves and then we're back on. And so phase one, that first session, that first week, I think it's just re-exposing them to the shapes of the sport. So it's just getting them into the positions they would need, letting those muscles be exposed to really low load, but just in those body positions that they're used to. So it's really just getting back to the shape of running, the shape of a defensive stance, the shape of jumping, like some little low effort jumping. Just expose the muscles, tendons, ligaments, bones to those stresses. I mean, the classic example of that is with the WNBL program at the Boomers, we'll have athletes come in from NBL 1, and so they've been playing semi-professional basketball all season, but a gun WNBL player doesn't really get out of second gear in NBL 1.
Yep.
like they play, but they can get by without really pushing themselves too hard because they're a big fish in a small pond.
Yep.
But they've been playing basketball for 6 months. They come into our program, and if we're not careful, we will have a rash of really extreme levels of soreness just because they're not used to getting into the stance that Guy Malloy likes, because he likes a really deep athletic stance. So it's just stuff like that. So phase one, week one, don't worry about getting too fit. Get their timing better. Get the passing going good. Get them shooting. And they should do workouts that are a bit underwhelming. It's yep. just getting the shapes going, I guess.
And that's going to be a really hard sell for a lot of them, for a lot of our coaches, yeah. to our players as well, because our players are like chomping at the bit saying, we just want to play. Go. We just want to get yeah. back into this thing as quickly as possible. How yeah. do you sell that to the players and the parents that we just need to wait?
I think the sell has to be is you need a structures first approach. If your structures aren't right, it doesn't matter how good everything else is. If you're structurally unsound or damaged, you're not going to play at all. So the choice is a slow structure focused rebuild or a long, painful, boring structure focused rebuild after an injury.
Yep.
Like, however you do it, it's going to be structures.
Correct. Well, and you've just had 3 months off. You don't want another 6 weeks off because you've gone and got yourself injured doing something you shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I talk about it in terms of if you're thinking of your athletic base, so you've got structural integrity down the bottom. That's the widest part of the pyramid. Built on top of that is work capacity. That's fitness. And everyone wants to get straight to that. It's like, yeah.
Yep.
But you need the body to do the fitness work. And then on top of that, movement skills, so sprinting, jumping, cutting, landing, and on top of that, explosiveness.
Yep.
And so you're actually, I think you want to take that approach of building that. It's an explosiveness, which is the big separator. Like when it comes down to it, it's all very well long-term turning up every day, but being explosive is what's going to make you perform better in sport. But you've got to start at the base and just build that up.
So what are the things... I don't know, warm-up 2.0 has existed for as long as that, and it keeps getting tweaked, which is fantastic as well. And it is a great warm-up for anyone that hasn't seen it. Please do go and visit the Core Advantage website. Right.
It's the labor of love for me over the last... Well, I started doing that seriously in 2006 was when that warm-up kicked in.
Yep.
And we've been updating it and changing it. We actually didn't change the name because it's going to sound stupid, but it's probably actually warm-up 4.8 by now.
If it's anything like my iPhone, I keep having to update that thing every 2 minutes, it feels like. But it is a great warm-up for athletes. Is that something you'd recommend doing before training sessions?
100%. That could make a humongous difference. So the whole warm-up 2.0 idea came about in 2006. I got the gig with the Australian Sapphires under 21 national team. I got the gig ahead of a couple of very credentialed people at the AIS. And I was pretty insecure. I was like, holy hell, this is a big gig. We're going away to the World Championships. And I said, well, I'm going to design the best warm-up in the world. Like, whatever happens with the team is out of my hands. But every bit I do, if I can make that world class, it's going to go well. And the girls hated my guts. We were the first team to do foam rolling as a team, as far as I'm aware, in the country. So we did the foam rolling and they hated me. But the results... we were undefeated except against America. We won silver. We had no injuries. And the athletes that were part of that team, so a young Jenna O'Hay was part of that team, young Kayla George was part of that team, those athletes went through their whole career continuing on with that stuff. So it really works. And the idea is foam roll to start, basically undo the knots, do some stretching, do some activation, practice movement skill, which sounds so simple. It sounds pretty obvious. But most people don't put them all together or they put them in the wrong order. The big benefit you're going to get out of that, I think, in terms of a post-lockdown, is that when you're foam rolling, you get used to a certain level of soreness that you have in your body. And the foam rolling is a bit like a pre-flight system check. Like you're rolling and you might hit your right glute and you're like, oh, my God, that's normally a 3. That's an 8. And you hadn't noticed that walking around. So I think it's drawing your attention to your tight spots. And it's also fixing the tight spots. So it's diagnostic and it's preventative. So I would be getting religious about that. I think that can really, really pay off.
And you hit on a great point there. Now is a great time to actually start forming habits if they haven't had these habits before. Like you're talking about players that have been exposed to it and have continued throughout their career. Now is a great time to get our athletes, if they've never done this sort of thing, to get them on board now.
It's like if we could get everyone doing that warm up and cool down, we would put physios out of business left, right, and center. because it just has such a high preventative effect. And people, you know, I bang on about warm-up. People are like, oh, you love warm-up so much. I'm like, I don't. It's just that it's such an open layup for injury prevention. Like the warm-up plus basic strength and a bit of load management, you're 98% of the way done for bulletproofing an athlete. It's just doing it. It's boring. It's like the broccoli of sport.
Yep.
But the payoff's huge.
So we're potentially returning to reduced training times and the like with our athletes. Do not shortchange the warm-up or the cool-down. If you're going to shortchange anything, shortchange a little bit of the basketball skill sort of thing, but do not shortchange your warm-up or cool-down coaches. Please listen to this.
Please do. And also, what you need to do, at least for the first month or two, is put that warm-up inside the training session. Yep. Like a lot of people kind of have, if you think of like brackets, it's like the brackets is the training session and they put the warm-up on the outside of the brackets.
Yep.
You know, like training's at 4, warm-up at 3:50.
Yep.
No. Put it, be like track and field. Track and field, if training's at 4, track and field spend, and training's from 4 to 6, track and field will spend 25 minutes warming up. I'm not saying go that extreme, but because they're dealing with high-velocity athletes, they've really got to get that stuff right. They need to get, once they're in the habit of it, I think you can make it a little more automatic. Yep. You can also use our app, the Core Advantage Interval Timer, which we've built into it a timer for the stretching. So you can have the athletes run it long-term. So when Jacob was up at East Coast Challenge and Country Cup this year, he would put an iPad in the middle of the, so the app's free, anyone can download it, put an iPad in the middle of the circle, press play, and then the athletes would just follow it along. So it doesn't require much coach effort. It's just positioning it within the brackets,
yep. I guess. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a fantastic app. I've used it with a lot of my teams in the past as well.
Yeah, we just scratched our own itch.
Oh, it's fantastic. In all honesty, like they hated the off-season training running and things like that, but the game fit, like they couldn't stand that, but that usually means it's pretty good. So
it's probably worth touching on why we built the app too. It's a good big way of yours. So what happened is every summer, so we work 48 weeks of the year to get our athletes bulletproof and strong and fast, and you know, we're really happy. December rolls around. We've had a great year of training. We've put in great work. January rolls around. Half our athletes are injured. And it feels like our entire year was a waste of time.
Yep.
It was so frustrating. So a few years ago, we said, all right, well, clearly the problem is they're doing too much of a deload. We'll write programs for them. We'll get them all set, good to go. And we did that. And we literally took every athlete and we called their parents, called them, and mapped out every single day of the Christmas break. And we said, okay, on Tuesday, the 27th of December, you're going to do this. On Wednesday, we mapped it. It was very laborious. Like it took 2.5-3 months to do it. But we had every athlete with this perfect map of what they had to do. And we were like, awesome, we've nailed this. They went away. They came back. We had almost exactly the same injury rate. And we were heartbroken. And then we asked the athletes, so did you actually do the work? And they're like, oh, no, I forgot how to what you told me.
Brilliant.
So the next summer, the next year, we built the app. And the whole point of the app was every single piece of homework we thought was essential to do, we put in the app with instructions, with video, so that they couldn't miss. So we went through the same process again. We wrote everyone their program out. Next year they came back, almost no injuries.
Yep.
Like we completely transformed it because we'd made it into an app. And it's the best thing we've ever done. Like people around the world use it, and we're happy to just give it away and makes a difference. And it's got everything you need. And we're going to be continuing to add things to it. So we've added a new fartlek, a new version of interval training to it, and we're going to keep adding things to it. And we've actually just pushed out an update for our athletes, which is added a bookings app to it. So our athletes can now book their times in the gym via that app, so it's become even more important for us.
Jeez, you're going to start laying off staff if this keeps hanging up.
No, coaches.
But I mean, that is a fantastic way of using things. We touched a bit about the warm up, but the cool down is important as well. I mean, we're potentially going to be in a position where we're going to be ushered out of stadiums fairly quickly to get the new group in and things like that. What's something that our athletes can do to just save themselves on that cool down, so it's not walk out, put the jumper on, jump in the car, drive home?
I think it would be in that, because you are being ushered in and out. You can't hang around the stadium. So I think it would be chuck on your trackies so you're nice and warm, just do like a 5 to 10 minute little walk around the car park, or get out of the car park, get to where there's more space, or just get the blood pumped. So you don't, because what you don't want is, you don't want blood pooling in your lower legs in the car on the drive home. That's not ideal. You want to get a bit of that blood pumped back around. And then when you get home, quick little foam roll and stretch. Like, we're talking 6 minutes of work.
Yep.
That 6 minutes of work you do when you get back home, the pressure from the foam rolling actually turns us. So when we play sport, we're in fight or flight mode. So we're sympathetic nervous system dominant. So we're all, you know, sort of aroused and ready to go. When we finish, though, we're still in that mode, and that interferes with sleep. You know, and we all know the feeling. You've played a late game, and you just want to get to sleep, and you can't. Foam rolling, the pressure of it actually helps switch your body back into parasympathetic mode, into rest and digest mode. So it's going to help you recover for the next day by virtue of loosening off the muscle tissue. But equally importantly, it's going to help your body just to kind of calm down a little, so you get that sleep. You secrete the growth hormone, among other things, which helps you grow and recover. And then the next day, you hit the day having had a great 8 hour sleep, rather than having had maybe a 7 hour sleep. So there's a lot to be said for it.
Absolutely. What is, we've discussed the best things to do. What is the absolute worst thing a coach could do in week 1 and 2 when returning?
I don't have to think hard for this one. I had a soccer athlete. So I got I sent out an email to all of our not just our athletes, but our whole database. And I just said, we don't train all of you guys, but I just want you to be aware we're really concerned that we're going to have a rash of injuries. I strongly recommend you go watch The Art of the Reload, our presentation, but also be mindful of this, this, and this. I sent that out, and already the emails are starting to come back to me, which is our coach pushed us too hard. I'm injured. What do I do? And this was the classic. It was a soccer athlete. We'd had a history of injuries, which is why they were following some of our stuff. First week back, Tuesday, Friday night training, or Friday night game, Saturday morning, 12 hours later, training again. So the biggest thing I reckon you can do is push too hard or have stuff stacked up next to each other that closely. Like, you have to have 48 hours at the start, 48 to 72 hours between sessions. Because, you know, we all know, like, if you've not been exercising for a while and you do a hard session, the next, about 24 hours later, you go to get up out of the couch or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm a little sore. And then, but then you're like, oh, dude, this is just the beginning. And typically for most people, 48 hours post-exercise, you know, that's when you're really your sorest. And then 72 to 96 hours later is when your body's actually done its magical rebuild and you're good to go again. So your spacing early days wants to be more like every 72 hours or 48 at a minimum, but definitely not 12 or 24, because you've dug a hole and you're just digging it deeper. So I think that's the single biggest mistake, is digging too deep a hole by working too hard, or just spacing them. So you're basically hitting the athlete before they've bounced back. You got to exercise is damage. Like, it's a dose of damage, and that's how we get better. But you got to dose and space it the right way. I think that's, if you cannot do that, you're halfway there.
Well, we can only hope. Man, that's how I get off the couch normally, is a little bit sort of crooked in the back and things like that. But that is a really important thing. And in particular, with a lot of our athletes that have multiple coaches and multiple training sessions, trying to space out enough recovery time in between is going to be really important for them. So that whole planning out your week as to what do I need to be at, what is the load going to look like, is really important for our athletes to manage on their own time as well. It's not just the coaches.
Yeah, exactly. The athletes have got to think of it. The coaches have got to think of it, I think, and just communication. I always think of I don't know many proverbs, but it's a Solomon's, King Solomon parable, which is it's ancient times. Two women come to the king, and the king makes all the decisions. And two women come to the king, and they're both fighting over this baby. Like, this is my baby. No, it's my baby. And they want the king to resolve it for them. And the king says, fine, cut the baby in half and give half to each. And the true mother's like, no, you take it, and hands the baby to the non-true mother, because she obviously loves her child so much, she doesn't want it to get cut in half. And it's kind of like, that's the approach you've got to take as a coach, I think. I think we've all got to be having that sense of, well, you know what, if another coach, if I've got to give up a bit of my session for the better of this kid, let's do that. Just, it's got to be a period where we really put that front and center. And, you know, if a kid gets slightly, if a young athlete gets slightly underloaded during this period of a session here, a session there, that's so much better than being slightly overloaded, because the overload will accumulate.
Yep.
And you think you're doing fine, and then you get to week four and you've got a tendinopathy. Because it would be great if your behavior made, if we were like cars, where as soon as there's a problem with the car, a light flashes up. That would be
much easier.
Great.
Yeah.
But it's so often a thing that you'll create a problem in week one by overcooking an athlete, and you won't even see it to week four. And when they say, my foot's a bit sore in the navicular bone, and you're like, oh, that's interesting, yeah. You know. So I think it's that sense of, yeah, just if you underload slightly here or there, that's fine. Overloading here or there is probably going to get you a bit of trouble.
Absolutely.
And to just one more thing, from a normal perspective, if you're in normal team training settings, if you have 10 athletes and a few of them are really fit, a few of them are medium and a few of them are not as fit, and you push the team really hard, the good thing is you can get away with that, because the fit ones will cope with it, the medium ones won't, and only a couple of your stragglers might be at risk of getting hurt. But it's like we've got a whole team full of stragglers now. So you could make that training load error, and you could have 7 of your 10 team in trouble. And, you know, that's a big issue, rather than just having 2 of them. So it's a different game at the moment.
It is. And does court time come into this as well when we start looking at the games? Because we're probably going to have reduced games. Does it matter how coaches sub in this situation as well?
Yeah, look, and subbing's a nightmare. Subbing's hard. I just want to, like, everything else I've said, I reckon coaches should just listen and do it, and it's not that complicated, and just get around it. You have all my sympathy in the world with subbing, because subbing is, you're playing a game of chess at a million miles an hour, and you've got to think about subs.
Yep.
So full sympathy. But yeah, I think if you can try and block your subbing a little bit, in the sense that, where possible, so let's say you've got a bigger athlete, because they do tend to be more, bigger you are, the higher the ground reaction forces that are going through the body, the more likely you are to not move as much like a ninja. So it might be that you have a look at maybe, you know, monitoring your bigs loading a little bit more and chunking their rest. So like you give them a 2-minute break at game time that's backed up with quarter time or half time. So you end up getting you end up getting 3 or 4 minutes of rest, but it's only cost you 2 minutes of absence from the game.
Yep.
So I think, and if where possible, a 4-minute rest, not a 4-minute game rest, but a 4-minute real world clock time rest, it's more than twice as good as a 2-minute rest.
Okay.
You actually develop the recovery, because you've got to think of it in terms of work to rest ratio. So if I want an athlete to play for 4 minutes at high intensity, I want roughly a 1-to-1 ratio where they can now rest for around 4 minutes. It doesn't have to be stone perfect.
Yeah.
But just that sort of ballpark. Whereas if it's 4 minutes on, 1 minute off, your chance of success is pretty low.
Yeah.
So it's just trying. And we talk a bit more depth about it in the workshop as well, which is worth having a look at too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So coaches, use your assistants in particular with subbing at this point. Like, keep a track of the minutes with their athletes. In particular, kids that are potentially going to have to play on a Friday night and then train on a Sunday morning, be mindful of their load, in particular these first couple of weeks especially.
And it really does pay off. I'll never forget, I was working for Tom Maher, who's, you know, a brilliant and fascinating coach. And I mentioned about this phenomenon with the 4 minutes. And what I love about Tom is he's like a sponge for knowledge. If you mention a thing, he will take a note, he'll embrace it. He's always looking to ways to be a better coach, despite being so, you know, successful. And that's why he's successful. But I mentioned the 4-minute thing. He's like, have you got a stopwatch? I'm like, yeah, like start timing it as of now. And so this was when we had Liz Cambridge in the team and he wanted to get the most productivity out of her. So every time she sat down, my job at sitting, I finally had a game day role rather than just chatting out how long in the key. Every time she sat down, I had to time it. And he would look down the bench and say, is she good? And I'd be like, thumbs up, 4 minutes, back in.
Interesting.
And, yeah, that works.
It works. Fantastic. Mm. Is there anything our athletes can be doing in their own time? Like those that don't have gyms and the likes, I mean, are obviously a little bit limited, but what can our athletes be doing in this meantime without games on and without training to just try and slowly build up as well?
There's so much you can do. You can get easily paralyzed into, oh, I can't do the perfect thing. It's like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Yep. Like something is a gazillion times better than nothing. If you've got land and gravity, you can do a hell of a lot of stuff. We, as part of our broader outreach last summer, made up a program called the Summer Holiday Program, which is you can go to our website, download that for free again. The process of enrolling it's a little bit clunky because we're not tech wizards. We're giving it a crack. But the content is, it's got a series of workouts, a series of videos of me instructing how to do them, and then some articles explaining the why behind it. And so it's just simple things like bodyweight squats, push-ups, glute bridges, like, just if you can just expose the body to some basic strength work, maintain some running stuff, and if you can get access to a bike and do some high-intensity cardio, some high-intensity off-legs cardio, because everyone's quite rightly desperate to get that high-end fitness back up, that anaerobic fitness, because basketball is very anaerobic. But we don't have the structures to tolerate the load. It's like it's like the chassis can't handle the work the engine needs to put in. So get on the bike there's no chassis load at all. You just work on the engine. So if you can do that, do 8 seconds on, 12 seconds off. I think that stuff is going to pay off. And then look at the pointy end, Alana Smith is an athlete that trains with us, Liz Cambridge, those guys, they have been smashing their bike work because they know they can hang on to that anaerobic fitness.
Absolutely.
So that's good. And just a bit of exposure to load, like change of direction, that kind of stuff.
Excellent. That's all very helpful for our athletes and in particular our coaches. And then our coaches have been fantastic and they've done the Zoom sessions with them. They've given them some holiday planner type stuff. Now is not the time to back off that either. Like now is the time to really ramp that up and say, actually, here's some more. Like it's different, but just here's some more work for them because we do want our athletes in the best possible shape we can. We want to put the physios and the chiros out of work. They've got enough work at the moment.
Don't tell my physio and chiro mates that. I agree. I think totally. And I've been super – I've had so many coaches reach out since that presentation because we had a huge turnout for that. And it's just really nice to see. I don't think I've ever seen before such a uniformity of – it's that kind of we're all in this together. Let's do everyone. Everyone's trying to do extra to be better, to look out for each other. And I think it's great. I've had more communication with coaches in this lockdown period than ever. It's been great.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And I would encourage everyone to go and have a look at The Art of the Reload. It is a fantastic resource. I had people hitting me up constantly for it. And have you seen it? And like, yep, Core Advantage website. Away you go. It is a really fascinating look into what can possibly go wrong, but how we can actually do it right. Because we only really get one chance at this. We screw this up and...
There's no do-over.
Yeah, like those kids are missing some serious game time. So we do need to get it right. And we owe it to our athletes to get it right as well. We don't want to put them in a position where they can possibly do any harm. So you've got a mountain of resources on the website. What are the best ways to get in touch and have a look at all these sorts of things as well?
Yeah, so step one in terms of accessing that is coreadvantage.training. And you can just go look at that. I'll send you a link as well, which you can pop in the show notes. And we've got other resources there in terms of coaching stuff. But then in terms of our coaching, we're also getting a lot of people inquiring around how they can bring their teams in to see us.
Yep.
And that's because that's a thing we offer as well. Because sometimes coaches are understandably, in the same way as I wouldn't want to run a shooting clinic, coaches aren't particularly wanting to run how to teach the warm-up stuff and other bits and pieces. So we're doing more and more of that where teams will come in and do a session as well. They can get in touch with us for that kind of stuff at coreadvantage.com.au, which is our – we've sort of got the two websites. One's the national and international education side, and then one is the come into the gym and work out with us side.
Yep.
So they can do that and get in touch. And they can follow our podcast. Our podcast is – a varying quality. I'm not a natural as a podcaster, but we try.
Hey, don't tell anyone, but neither am I, Darren.
and that has a lot, like anything we care about, we've talked about at some point in the podcast. So there's some good info in there as well.
Absolutely is. And as I mean, some coaches will be aware of this already, but as part of the association level course, we actually have the coaches come into Core Advantage and go through a little bit of a session with you as well, like a little bit of theory, but also some jumping on the roller themselves, and the pain that goes through some of those coaches' faces when they jump on a roller for the first time is fantastic.
I love those faces. They're so funny.
They are the best. But until you've done it, you don't really understand what it can do for you as well. So it is one of those things where I would encourage as many coaches as possible, please do get involved in this. It's a fantastic resource that is so readily available to us. And that's the big thing, is that we do need to be mindful that we can screw this up if we're not careful. But there is a fantastic resource in Core Advantage that can help us do the right thing as well.
It makes such a difference. Yeah.
I think
you can do all the right things and it won't go perfect for you. You still might get an athlete get injured. Yep. You see it even at the very pointy end, like Lance Franklin's hamstring.
Yeah.
Like he set that injury up in the first training back, I reckon, with probably too much kicking.
Yep,
because he'd been doing all the running work, but not necessarily the kicking. You're not used to it. So you can do everything right, and you can just miss something. But it's the difference between having one athlete go down with an injury and having eight.
Yep, absolutely. Darren, really appreciate your time today. It's been a fantastic listen as always. And please, coaches, do have a look at the Core Advantage website. There is so much information on there that can really help our athletes. So, Darren, thank you for your time. Good luck with the relaunch on Monday. It comes around.
Monday, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how it goes with the new flows and all the stations and things like that.
Yeah, it's like brand new. I'm looking forward to it. So thanks for having me, and I'll speak to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Darren.
All right. See you.
Big thanks to Darren for jumping into the podcast today. As we mentioned a number of times, there is a wealth of free information that I could highly recommend you checking out on the Core Advantage website, which is just coreadvantage.com.au. All their app work, their training gear, their notes and all those kinds of things are a great resource for coaches to use, in particular as we're starting to return to sport now. As well as the usual likes, shares, retweets, etc. Coaches, please take your time in returning your athletes to full-on competitive action. We have a responsibility to our athletes to make sure we keep them in a safe environment. And returning straight to play is not the way to do this. And there'll be some athletes, of course, that survive in that situation, but there will be so many injuries coming out of this if we don't look after our athletes. I cannot stress enough how poor an idea this is to rush straight back into competitive situations. So coaches, please look after your players in this situation. If you see them trying to play in like tournaments or anything like that, please discourage that. That is not the way to return to sport, and it's going to cause us massive problems. We don't want athletes that have sat out now for a few months having to sit out for a few more or even longer just because they've been so eager to get back. So please make sure that you stay educated in this topic and you make it a slow build and a slow return back into play. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week as we return to the Talking Split podcast.